my pleasure to introduce Simone Joyeux, ACFRE. She's described as one of the most thoughtful, inspirational, and provocative leaders in the philanthropic sector. A consultant specializing in fund development, strategic planning, and board development, Simone works with all types and sizes of nonprofits, speaks at conferences worldwide, and teaches in the graduate program for philanthropy at St. Mary's University in Minnesota. Her books, Keep Your Donors and Strategic Fund Development, are standards in the field. Her feature articles, nonprofit quarterly web column, and blog receive rave reviews. She founded the Women's Fund of Rhode Island, chaired CFRE International when it became an independent corporation, and regularly serves on boards. So without further ado, Simone.
Just 1 second while we do the, you know, whatever. So how many of you have board members? I can do this just loud. I know you're going to turn on. But how many of you have board members who currently join you asking for gifts? Okay, it's coming on. Is it on? Okay. How many of you have board members who currently help you solicit gifts personally face-to-face? Wow, that's really good. Then why are you here? Because you want more. Okay. All right. All right. So here's my vision. And this is what I experienced as a chief development officer when I was a chief development officer at a theater company in Rhode Island. Every year, as part of our annual operating fundraising, this was not for a capital campaign. Every single year, as part of our annual operating fundraising program, we solicited 500 individual and corporate prospects with 75 volunteers, only 10 of whom were on the board. They did the asking. I managed the process. So to me, that's the vision we should all aspire to. No matter which country we're in, no matter what community, we should be doing more personal face-to-face solicitation every year for annual operating support. And I don't care how big your development office is, you can't do it on your own, right? And ultimately, I want board members so equipped to do this that I don't have to go with them, that I can just send them out. Now, of course, the challenge with just sending them out is sometimes they don't do it perhaps as perfectly as I might. I'll never forget one solicitor telling me, well, I finished my calls and I contacted Julie, and you know, I didn't ask her for the amount, Simon, that you suggested that I ask her for. I simply said to her, well, Julie, you know, you've given before, just do whatever. He told me this with some pride. And then Julie called and said, well, you know, I was solicited by your board member. It was a good experience. And, you know, I was prepared to give more, but he just said, well, you know, whatever. So, of course, we want to not have that happen too often. So if our vision is more personal face-to-face solicitation, and keep in mind, we're talking about personal face-to-face solicitation. I know Julie personally. I would meet with her and ask her. We're not talking about street fundraising. Face-to-face solicitation outside North America typically means street fundraising. It's not what I'm talking about. Okay. So why isn't this happening more? And I would suggest to you that it's because we have so many challenges and barriers that why would we expect any board member would do this or any other fundraising volunteer? And I believe it is past time that we in this room as fundraisers acknowledge that the problem is us. We're the ones who have helped create a series of myths, barriers, etc. So how many of you have read the Compass Point Report, Underdeveloped? Write it down right now. The report is called Underdeveloped, colon, something else. All you need to do is look up on the internet, Underdeveloped and Compass Point. This is a study that was done, again, in the United States. However, based on my experience in other countries, I would suggest a whole lot of it's true elsewhere. So this is a report that studied fundraisers, fundraising executives, why they were leaving jobs. And here's the sort of summary, okay? The three key points, if you will, in my words, of the Underdeveloped report are, number one, a significant percent of development directors don't know the body of knowledge. Who knows why they decide to take the job, but they don't know the body of knowledge and they don't bother to learn it. Now, that's obviously not you because you're here at this conference. So, X percent of board of development officers don't know the body of knowledge, don't bother to learn it. X percent know it and are desperately trying to get their executive directors to let them do it. And the executive directors are like, no, I just don't like that direct mail letter. It's just not my voice, you know. Or I have to say I shared it with my life partner and a number of other friends, and they just don't respond to that kind of language. So we've got executive directors who aren't paying attention to development officers who know the body of knowledge. We've got development officers who don't know the body of knowledge. And boards and board members, well, they're just lost in space. So you want to read this report. You want to talk with your executive director, your CEO, your bosses about it. You want to talk with your boards and your fund development committees about it. Because this dirty, dark, not-so-secret secret is allowing us to not raise as much money. So you want to get your board members to help fundraise, to personally ask for gifts, you gotta fix what's wrong. So you gotta fix the Underdeveloped report. You gotta look at things like, why are they afraid? Because let's be very clear about this. A whole lot of this is, they don't wanna be rejected. They don't wanna be put in front of someone, Brian, and go, I don't know what to say. Are there things I should be saying? I don't know what they are. So how many of you have actually talked with board members to ask them why they don't want to do personal face-to-face solicitation? All right, so somebody yell out, what did they say? Fear. So the whole fear of rejection. How do we deal with fear of rejection? I mean, what are you going to say to somebody? To me, there are two things to say. They're not rejecting you, they're just rejecting our organization. Wow, that makes me feel a lot better. Not so much. Okay. The other thing is like, has anybody in this room ever been rejected in any kind of situation? Personal, professional, okay. But notice, you seem to be sitting upright. You are fully, clothed. You seem to function. So, we've got to help them get over that. One of the strategies I use frequently with board members and other volunteers, to try to get them to feel less worse. That's all I want, less worse. Do not fool yourself that they're going to like doing this. I don't care if they like doing it. I expect board members to inconvenience themselves on behalf of the institution or to get the hell off the board. But you have the control over board members. You have the power to enable them and to empower them. And if you don't do it, then their dysfunction is as much your fault as theirs. So, one of the things that I frequently do with boards is what I call a complain and whine session. It can be semi-amusing. A number of people have said if you added wine to the whine, it could be good. What you want them to do is lance the boil of fear. You want them to say, I don't like this, I don't like this, I'm afraid of that, I need this, so that you can say, well, okay, we'll take care of that. We'll fix some of it. The rejection piece, you got to get over on your own. So, If we want them ultimately to be able to participate in face-to-face solicitation, we have to remove enough of the barriers, and we have to create an environment of understanding about what good fundraising is. Now, in your handout, which you don't have to have here, but is online, you'll see a series of things that I call basic principles of fundraising. You'll see a whole list of things that talk about what kind of environment do we have to create around fundraising so that people are less uncomfortable, but they still will be uncomfortable, chances are, and that's okay, that they feel more secure. So things like, has anybody in this room ever at a board meeting said, I'd like you to give me your Rolodex or your Hanukkah card list or whatever, and then we're going to send a direct mail letter and then you're going to follow up or something like that. This is confession time. Has anyone in this room ever asked board members to give you a list? Okay. That was very bad of us. I mean, I've done it too. I have a list. I have a list of friends. I have a list of colleagues. It doesn't mean any of them care about the organization whose board I serve on. Do not ask board members or any other staff person or any other volunteer, do not ask them to trespass on their personal and professional relationships. Do not do it. It is lousy, stupid fundraising because it's not sustainable. Furthermore, it freaks them out. They think fundraising is they're supposed to ask their friends for gifts. So, I can ask Mary Shirley, I can ask Julie, I can ask Barb. I can say, you know, you're my friend. Hell, you are my student. You owe me. Okay? I gave you good grades. I need you to give a gift to my favorite charity. Barb. Okay, look, you know, I'm on the board, you know, that place in Tucson. And, I am desperate. I got to sell tickets. I know you don't like events. I don't like events either, but please, as a friend, would you buy me a ticket? My mommy, who lives in Michigan, gives a gift to the Women's Fund I started in Rhode Island. Why? I didn't even ask her. Why? Because I'm her daughter, right, and she likes me or something. So, we have created this atmosphere for our board members and our other volunteers that no wonder they don't want to do anything in fundraising, let alone the scariest personal thing, which is like to be like right in front of your face and look in your eyes and say, and so I was wondering, would you consider giving a gift? So enough with the trespassing. Enough with the thinking that people want to give to your organization to achieve your mission. Listen to me carefully. Donors, whether it's you or me, give through your organization to achieve their own aspirations and desires. You are a conduit to achieve my aspirations. If you do not nurture the relationship with me well, you're a dime a dozen. I can find another charity through which to give my gifts to fulfill my aspirations. These are the things that your volunteers need to understand so that they feel less uncomfortable to go out and ask for a gift. They are not supposed to trespass. They are supposed to find those who might be interested. I was actually talking to a gentleman as I was riding up on the escalator, an individual I know, and he said, oh my God, I watched it last night. I said, you did? So did I watched part of it. Right. Do you know what we watched last night that we're extraordinarily interested in, apparently, the two of us? Who? Game of Thrones. But apparently some people in here are interested in Mad Men. Do you know who amongst your friends would like to watch Game of Thrones with you? Do you know which among whom among your friends want to watch the three extended DVD versions of Lord of the Rings at a sleepover with popcorn? You know the same things about your donors, and your volunteers and board members know the same thing about their friends. Their job is to identify those who might be interested and to introduce and to cultivate. And the same thing holds true of your donors. Your job is to learn what their interests are and to nurture the relationship. Before I would ever ask a board member or any other volunteer to ask for a contribution, I would ask them to help nurture a relationship. Why? I want them to have a positive experience. I want them to see that this is not about just asking for money. It's about fulfilling people's aspirations. So if I were you, before I ever ask a board member or any other volunteer to actually help solicit a gift, I would engage them in relationship building first. I would make sure that every single one of my board members is making thank you calls to donors. One of the most wonderful, powerful experiences a donor can ever have, and a board member too. How many of you in here have ever received a thank you call as a donor for giving a gift, and there was no solicitation? Okay, look around the room. Look at how few people are raising their hands. That's bad. You want your board members or other fundraising volunteers to help solicit a gift? You show them the depth of relationships and the concepts of good fundraising before you ever say, okie dokie, now you want to help solicit. So, involve them in thank you calls. Involve them in storytelling and story gathering. How many of you in this room have ever been asked by a charity where you give a gift to share your philanthropic story with the charity? Raise your, okay, even, all right, so what was it like? Was it a good experience? Did you like it? Did it make you feel proud? Did you have some sort of, did it make you feel flattered? Was it a learning moment for you? Was it like, did you reflect? Did you think about something you hadn't thought about before? Anybody? Imagine if you invited your board members to call donors and sit down with them and collect their philanthropic stories, do you think that would be a nice experience for your board members? Do you think they might learn something? Do you think they might feel proud of your organization? Do it. Create multiple opportunities for your board members and other fundraising volunteers to experience the beauty of philanthropy and to get interchanges with donors that make both the donors and your board members feel flattered, proud, as if they've just experienced something wonderful. Create as many experiences as you can so that board members do not identify solicitation as this icky, invasive, transactional activity. Because somehow we have made them think that's what it is. How many of you have ever been like on an airplane, you know, and you sit, and somebody sits next to you and they say, so what do you do? Or you say, well, I'm a fundraising executive. And the next thing you know, the person's asking the flight attendant if they could move to another seat. We joke about people perceive us as used car salespeople. That's not a particularly positive image, apparently. That's what your board members and your fundraising volunteers are coming into this with in their minds. So you have to turn that around. One of the first things, as I say, I would do is I'd do the complain and whine session. I would make sure I create these other alternative experiences for my board members and my potential fundraising volunteers. I would ask them, what do you need to do this work? If I were to ask you at some point in the future, as a board member, to join me in a solicitation, what would make you comfortable there? So what have board members said to you, or what do you suspect would make them comfortable? Somebody say something and yell it really loudly. A role play. We can do a role play. Now, there are any number of people who go, oh my gosh, I'm just not participating in a role play. Fine. Then do one in front of them. Show them what can happen. And partner that with, if you have board members who agree, or other fundraising volunteers who agree to go out on a solicitation, which kind of prospect are you going to give them? One who is going to say yes. Absolutely. In fact, I had an organization contact me and say, we know you're going to say yes. You already said you would say yes if we asked you. Can we bring an inexperienced solicitor with us so that that person has a successful experience? And I said, of course. What else are board members and other fundraising volunteers going to say they need to do this? Good briefing notes. Now think about this for a moment. Briefing notes. You know, we might also, you know, key messages, the sort of case for support, that sort of thing. What do you think they do not need to have details or briefing notes about? They shouldn't need to know, have briefing notes about their own personal story. But we should tell them, you are a storyteller. As a solicitor, you are a storyteller. Think about your own personal story about why you care about this organization. In fact, why don't you, at a board meeting, ask one or two board members to tell their personal story about why they care? Because won't that get them ready to be better at sharing their personal stories when they're nurturing a relationship or soliciting a gift? What else? I want you to think about this. What kind of information do they, yes, need to know, or do they not need to know? They need to know the ask amount. And think about this for a moment. How many of them do you think are comfortable with the concept of asking for a particular amount? Probably on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being high, they're down at 1 or minus 1. They finally worked up the courage, they're going to go on a solicitation, and so would you give a gift? And now you want me to say, would you consider a gift of blank dollars? So what do we have to tell them? Okay, we have to tell them past giving, but what do we have to tell them about why to ask for a particular amount? Why do we have to tell that, all, that money will be used for this, but why do we have to tell the board members? How will you justify to the board member solicitor or another volunteer solicitor of why they have to say, would you, Mary, consider a gift of $1,000? How are you going to explain that to them? Way in the back, but you have to scream loud. All right, so our colleague talked about, and remember, you have to justify this to the solicitor. You want board members and other fundraising volunteers to help solicit, you've got to explain to them how this works and why. So the theory of asking for a particular amount, I think, has two portions or parts. One is, we give people something to look at that we've done our research and think they would consider. You give them something to look at, and they look at that as opposed to inventing some figure, right? And we know that technically it has a better chance of getting that gift and raising more money. So a lot of this is about us. Now let's turn it around. Because what your volunteers are thinking is, that's just going to make Mary uncomfortable. How are you going to explain to them that, in fact, giving an amount makes Mary less uncomfortable? She doesn't have to give it, and maybe she'll say no, but she's less uncomfortable if she has a sense of how much. It's like asking somebody out for dinner. I want to know where we're going, because if it's McDonald's, I'm not so interested. I want to know if you're asking me and you're paying, or if this is Dutch treat. And I also want to know if you know that I have a life partner, and so is the asking me out for dinner like collegial and business, or is it something more because I have a life partner and I'm not interested in something more? It's about making people feel comfortable. So, if we want board members and other volunteers to help solicit gifts, we have to explain the how, the why, the thinking behind this. Now, I want to go back to what information do they not need? I think we think they need a lot more information than they need. I think we think donors need a lot more information than they need. They don't need the 3-page financial analysis. And if actually one of your donors or prospects wanted that, you would explain to the volunteer solicitor, no big deal. Just tell them we'll send it to them. So as much of our work as is about giving them the tools they need, it's also being very realistic about what they do not need to do this. And we think they need far more than they need. Okay. So, our job, if we're trying to get board members and other volunteers to solicit gifts personally, is to understand their barriers and challenges, to help overcome them. Our job is to change the dynamic about fundraising and to understand that people give through organizations, not to organizations, and that people give based on their own interests, not yours, and you can't educate them to be interested. You don't look for Bill and Melinda or your version of Bill and Melinda because they have so much money and they give so much to everybody else, and you decide to educate them about how you're important. That's offensive and non-productive. We need to help our solicitors, the people we are aspiring to have as solicitors, understand the broader context of philanthropy and that people give through your organization, as I say, to achieve their own desires. Now, let's talk a moment about who you think and who I think might be good prospective solicitors. What does that person look like? So I want you to think of your own board members, okay? I want you to think about who you think on your board might be a really good solicitor and why. Because we're scouts, right? Like sports scouts, right? You know, they go out and look for people or something. I'm very kind of ill-informed about sports. So, but we're scouts to find people who have potential, to find people who appear to be already there and ready, and to bring them into the solicitation fold. So, I want you to talk at your table. I'm going to give you maybe 60 seconds about what you think makes a good solicitor, what you are looking for in skills behaviors. Go. Okay. One of the things I'd like you to think about is the importance of engaging people in your organization, so that can be board members, in conversations like the one you just had. Now, I realize this was a very short conversation. But instead of us only talking to us about, gee, who might be a good solicitor, could you have a 5-minute conversation at a board meeting about that? Could you ask your board members what they think makes someone a good solicitor? Because in fact, how much you want to bet, if you're doing that like at a board meeting with board members, or you're doing that at the Fund Development Committee meeting, they're going to say things that are true, but they're also going to say things that are not necessarily true. As in, someone might say, well, you know, to be a good solicitor, I mean, you can't be shy. You got to be really, you know, out there. You got to be able to stand up on a stage and make a presentation. Is that what you have to be able to do to be a good solicitor? Would you really want someone really flashy, you know, wears like really big rings? Who's got? Do you really want that with some of your solicitors, with some of your prospects, your donors? I was once doing a training on face-to-face solicitation, and there was a client of mine in the room, and people started saying, well, you know, they have to be like you, Seema, and they have to, you know, they have to wear weird rings, and they have to be like really out there, and they have to be able to talk like this, and this is the way you have to solicit. And this client of mine said, oh my God, I would no more want somebody like Seema, the way she behaves like this, soliciting some of my shy donors. I mean, what, we're going to like roll all over them? So, you know, I did respond that I can moderate my behavior, but so have the conversation with your board, because they're going to be there saying things like, I can't do it because I'm not articulate, or I don't think quickly on my feet, or I'm too shy. And you may be able to say to them, but you tell some of the most beautiful stories in our organization. And you're one of our best thank you callers. And you're gracious and kind, and you listen well. And we would love to have you go with Mary, who will actually do the ask. So my point is, engage people in conversations like we're trying to do this morning, because it helps build their understanding, allows you to hear their worries and respond to them. So what did you come up with about what we're looking for in good solicitors at your table? And scream it out. Okay, people who already give to you. Okay. Nobody can solicit a gift unless they already give. And that means you and me if we're staff. You cannot solicit, you cannot ask for a gift if you don't give a gift yourself. So in fact, we might be recruiting people to be solicitors who are not yet financial donors, but we explain, you know, you can't ask unless you give. And of course, all of our board members already give, and give every single year, so we don't have to worry about that. And if they don't, you can go to my session this afternoon, which is called Firing Lousy Board Members. Someone else, what are we looking for? What were you talking about at your table?
Gratitude. Someone who shows gratitude.
How nice. Someone who shows gratitude to the donor or the prospect. Isn't it? Think about that. When we think about people and we look at people, can we say this person is one of those people who is always comfortable acknowledging others, who demonstrates gratitude? Wonderful. What else are we looking for?
Passion.
Say what? Passion, involvement in the organization. You know, I'm so proud as the, I actually heard a speaker say this one time. He serves on 10 boards. He also has a job. He did acknowledge that he didn't go to all the board meetings of all 10 of the organizations. And it's kind of like, and then he gave varying sizes of gifts to all the organizations. It's like, I'm just not feeling all that much passion here. As solicitors, as askers of gifts, whether they're board members or volunteers, we want them to be passionate. When I had 75 volunteers soliciting gifts, only 10 of whom were board members, The other people were, remember this was a theater company, who do you think they were? Subscribers and ticket buyers who could talk with a donor and say, how did you like that performance? You know, I was like, it really made me angry. Did it make, you know, they could talk about their favorite actors. I just thought Richard was marvelous. So we want people who are passionate. What else when we're thinking about who's going to be? Yes, David. People who are good listeners. Do you think that a solicitation, a personal face-to-face solicitation, is a presentation or a conversation? Conversation. Do you think your board members and fundraising volunteers think it's a conversation or a presentation? I think they think it's a presentation. I think we have told them in many ways that it's a presentation. I think they think they're supposed to whip out the mini PowerPoint, that there's a ton of information they need to know, and they're scared that they won't know the right stuff, and that someone will ask them a question, and then they'll be embarrassed, and then they'll embarrass the organization, and that they have to keep that presentation going. Excuse me, no questions. I mean, I was sitting with another fellow board member making a solicitation with the prospect, and the other person was doing the most of the talking, and the prospect kept going, and I was sitting there thinking, how do I tell, you know, we should have worked out a code. Quit talking. Let the prospect say something. So very good listeners. Now, think about this. In order to listen, what do we have to do? What is the concept of conversation? How does conversation happen? Ask questions. We can't be a good listener because the other person won't say anything if we don't ask questions. So we have to be good conversationalists. So we have to look at board members who are good conversationalists. Now think about this. Add this in. Anybody here have children or bump into children or associate with children? And so you say things like, so how was school? Fine. What did you do? Stuff. We're not asking yes-no questions. We're trying to create questions that are engaging so that the donor or prospect will actually engage in a conversation, and the solicitor and the prospect or donor can have a conversation. So what if we started telling our board members, a solicitation is a conversation, and you are like one of the best conversationalists I've ever met. Notice how we were late for the board meeting the other day because we were talking in the hallway. What else when we're looking for solicitors? We're looking at our board members. Yes, sir. Very nice. Someone who actually understands the importance of fundraising. So, you know, an interesting sort of question is, does our organization, that means our staff, because just think about it, there might be a day when you have to bring along a program staff person to a solicitation, because that's who the donor wants to speak with. So that program staff person, that board member, need to understand the value of donors to our organization, not the value of the money. Our job is donors, not donations. This is a relationship, not a transaction. We have a donor retention crisis in the United States. We have a donor retention crisis in other countries, and it preceded the global economic crisis. We do not have that loyal of a donor base. 40 to 60% retention rates is bad. We treat them like they're ATM machines. And if your board members and if your staff colleagues don't get that this is about donors, not money, they will not be successful soliciting. Okay, one more thing when you're thinking about looking at potential solicitor prospects. Yes, ma'am. Somebody who's willing to stick to the plan and oh, very nice. Someone hadn't thought of that, but that was good. Someone who is willing to stick to the plan, that would be the solicitation plan, the background information you provided, the notes, the guidance, someone who's going to stick to the plan as opposed to, and you use one of my favorite phrases, go rogue. So that's going to link back to, we have to get them to understand fundraising, right? And the how and the why. We may have to do a little pre-planning if the two of us are going together, or we may have to have done some of the role-playing so they get how to do this. And maybe when you get a new person who volunteers to solicit for personally face-to-face, you don't let them do it alone the first few times. You are with them, or one of your trusted solicitors are, who can say, gosh, we need to follow the plan. Very nice. Yes? So our colleague has just said, we need to quit thinking about and communicating this to our potential solicitors, and we could probably get rid of the word solicitor and maybe call asker or inviter. Think about that. I'm inviting you to participate in making change. And so our colleague is saying, it's not about talking about the money, it's talking about the impact, right? It's also not about talking about the impact of the money. It's about talking about the impact of whom? The donor. So if we could change this thought process within our institution, within our field, right? So instead of saying solicitor, even instead of saying asker, how about inviter? I am inviting, for a moment, these two tables. They are board members of mine. I'm inviting you to help invite others who are interested in this cause to join in a fight that I think we can win. So think about that a moment. From a communications point of view, from a donor communications point of view, from a communication point of view with your board, who are we asking to what fight that we think we can win? You know, there was a lot of research, or there, first of all, there was a lot of talk about the 2008 U.S. presidential campaign when Barack Obama won, and he won, and he got so many gifts of smaller sizes, blah, 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 all this. So there's a guy at Yale University in Connecticut in the U.S. who said, his name is Dale Carlin, and he did research. And the research said, the donors said, we wanted to give to a fight that we thought we could win. Is that not hugely powerful? So what fight are you asking me as a donor to join? What fight are you asking me as a board member to invite others to join? What's the promise that you, and then I, as an inviter, are making to those donors? Your gift, you will produce this. You, not the money you gave, you will produce this. Imagine if we could change the way everybody in our institution thinks, everybody on our board thinks, and the way the sector thinks, to understand that this is what we're doing. Do you not think that people may be less reluctant and less uncomfortable as volunteers to recruit people to join this fight? So think of it in those terms. All right. So we've been talking about the vision of more inviting to participate in the fight. We've been talking about engaging volunteers and board members, more specifically, in sharing this vision, understanding fund development and philanthropy in a slightly different way, participating first as relationship builders and storytellers, then moving into, will you go on a call with someone, and eventually will you just take these five prospects yourself and go out and ask? We've talked a little bit about the kind of information that they need to do this. So now let's talk a little bit more about why we want volunteers to do this and what you want to tell them about why we want them to do this. Because let's face it, we hired you as staff. So I'm a board member, and we hired you people. And you're supposed to do this. And I don't want to. So what are you going to tell me about the added value I bring to the table if I join you as an inviter, an asker, as a listener? What's the added value I bring to the table if I join you as a staff person, or what's the added value if I do it by myself? Because we hired you and you're the professionals, so just do it. I don't know why you keep bugging the rest of us as volunteers to do it. Yes, sir. So our colleague is talking about the peer-to-peer. We, the organization, tried to get in touch with Mary Smith. But when Sarah Jones, Mary Smith's colleague and friend, contacted her, it was easier. So part of it is expanding the, if you are all our prospects, and we have board members and other volunteers who know many of you, it's not that we want our volunteers and board members to coerce you into giving, remember, no trespassing. But in fact, you're already qualified prospects, you're already interested, or you're already donors, and it's more comfortable for you if someone you know calls you. Why else is it important? Yes? Because I can't make 175 calls myself in a month. It's a volume business. So even if you're Harvard, who must have more solicitors on staff than any of us could conceivably imagine, they want some board members helping too because they got that many more prospects. What else? Yes, ma'am.
They add credibility to your ask.
They add credibility to your ask. Now, why in heaven's name? I mean, I'm the staff person and I'm brilliant and credible. Because what we have here is the concept of philanthropy, voluntary action for the common good. You are telling your prospective inviters, askers, solicitors, you're giving voluntarily. Obviously, you are too as a staff person. But the point is, having the volunteer in the room that says, I believe in this, I'm struggling for this, I was wondering if you would consider joining me, given the fact that you care about this too. So remember, you, as the leader in fundraising, have to justify all of this to the board members. Otherwise, they won't play. And the same holds true for other fundraising volunteers. They aren't going to play if you are not justifying and explaining this to them. Okay. Let's see. We've talked about what could make a good solicitor. We've talked about coaxing people to do this, right? Now let's talk about the actual okie-dokie. I'm so thrilled that you two tables have agreed. This is just really cool. So we're going to do the, what do we give them, the sort of training. If I were you, I would never use the word training. Never. Because, in fact, apparently these three people have done it 42 times, and even though perhaps not exactly the way I would have preferred you to have done it, I'm not going to say training. We're going to say, like, what, orientation, little chat we're going to have about how we like to do it here for this institution. I'm going to insist as much as I possibly can that even though you have successfully, the three of you, raised, I don't know what it was, $1 billion through your own asking, I'd still like you to talk with me about it, and we'll go over some of the key messages, et cetera. So I want an orientation. I'd prefer if everybody's kind of coming together to do the orientation because, you know, then we could do the role play or the this or the that, and there would be some sense of camaraderie. But if I have to, I'll do you one-on-one. Okay? So I want some sort of an orientation. I have been very clear to you about the role of the solicitor, the job description. So, you tell me, you're just confirming that I have agreed to be an inviter, asker, solicitor. So my job is what? I mean, you can also hand me the piece of paper, but you're going to go through this with me so that I'm nodding at each moment so there's agreement. So what are you telling me? My job is to ask for the appointment. Can't your office just do that? Just you call them and schedule them. I'll give you some time. Scheduling the appointment. It is better if the solicitor, asker, inviter schedules the appointment because it's easier to coordinate the schedules, but it's also about the fact that I'm actually calling someone I know. And you know, think about this a minute. A colleague of mine told me yesterday how weird it seemed for the staff person in a situation to call and say to the prospect, I'm calling to, you know, set up an appointment. Julie would like to come and chat with you. I guess that sounds good, as in Julie's very prestigious and she's going to ask to set up an appointment. Does that sound quite as good as, hi, it's Julie. I was wondering if we could get together. I mean, which feels, I don't know, friendlier, makes you, the donor, feel more special? Julie's calling. Julie took the time to call. She didn't shovel it off onto some staff person. All right. Now, so my job is to set up the appointment. Do you have any, like, advice you want to give me about setting up the appointment? I mean, I thought I would just say to my friend Mary, I thought we could get together for a cup of coffee. We haven't seen each other in ages, you know. I actually have to tell them I'm calling to ask them for a gift. Yeah. Hello, Mary. Love to get together with you, have a cup of coffee, because we both love this charity, and I picked you to talk with and tell you how we've been spending your money and what a huge difference you've been making, and to chat with you about another gift. So you better make sure that you've explained to me how to just set up the appointment. Now, when I called Mary, she was so gracious. She said, oh, for heaven's sake, you all don't need to meet with me. You know, just send me something and I'll give. I was so relieved. I thought, yippee, was that ever easy? Okie dokie, so we won't meet. We'll just send you something. No, you have to tell me, the asker, solicitor, don't. Of course, Mary's first response is going to be, oh, tut, 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 you don't have to meet with me. And my answer would be, I want to meet with you. You're special. All of our donors are special. Now, if this starts to get into an argument, no, really, you don't have to meet. Yes, I must meet with you. Okay, but you have to tell me this. That's part of my training called orientation. All right, so I'm supposed to get the appointment. I'm then supposed to what? What's the next thing you're telling me? I'm supposed to go to the appointment, apparently. I'm supposed to have a conversation. So you got to talk to me about conversation. You got to give me some tips on questions to ask donors, not yes, no ones, not ones that are going to get me the kid to say, yeah, we did stuff. It was fun. Yes. So very proactive. Instead of saying just to Mary, can we meet? It's like, might you be available the following two dates? Now, something else you got to tell me. If I'm planning on bringing somebody else, don't I need to get Mary's permission? Okay? So again, these are all things you have to tell me. You have to train me to understand this. All right. Now, so my job is I set up the appointment, I told them what the appointment was for, I told them if I was bringing somebody else, or I asked permission to bring someone else. That's very different than just telling them. So when I stepped down as the chair of the Women's Fund that I founded, I had to transition and make sure that even though I could still be a volunteer and help solicit gifts, I had to make sure that I also was transitioning the donors away from any relationship that was mine. And so I can remember saying to donors, I'm stepping down from the board. I believe founders need to leave. They all said, yes, good point. I said, so could I bring one of the new board members to the meeting? Oh, sure. But I was getting permission. All right, so we've had the meeting. I did well with the conversation. You'd be really pleased. Thank you for the extra notes about conversation starting points. Because, fine, I know Mary, but I don't necessarily know every single thing about her relationship and history with us, so you better be giving me some guidelines here, right? Now, it turns out that she was not prepared. I even asked, would you consider a gift of $1,000? Right? And she said she needs to think about it. And so, what do you expect me to respond? Set up a time to check back. So in my early years in fundraising, I presented the job of the solicitor as ask for the gift. What was I missing? Get the answer. Now, I guess I thought that was apparent and obvious when I was training my solicitors, but you know what? My bad, it wasn't. Get the appointment, have the conversation, learn more about the donor and her interests, bring us back the notes, ask for the gift amount recommended on the form, and get the answer. You got to tell me this. You have to have the handy-andy handout that reminds me of this. What else? Anything else you want to me to, that I'm supposed to do as the solicitor? I'm supposed to send a thank you note. Well, isn't the office going to? Of course, but wouldn't it be cool if I, like, you mean handwrote? Couldn't I send an email? Enough with the email! Please! Send a handwritten thank you note. And I actually, once I've solicited, I send a thank you note for the meeting as the volunteer that day. And if they made a pledge to me, I say in the thank you note, thank you so much for meeting with me. Thank you so much for your pledge of $1,000. The office will be sending you all the formal stuff. So again, you got to tell me this. I don't know this. I don't remember it. Put it on a piece of paper. All right, so we've found the right solicitors. We've changed the way we talk about fund development in our institution. We gave them positive experiences first through relationship-building activities. We did the orientation. We gave them all of the printed material, but not so much that they had to, you know, spend 10 hours reading it and then summarizing. They got all that. We made sure they had a successful first invitation ask solicitation. Are we going to have any kind of debrief? All right, so not only a debrief about the solicitation, the ask with that prospect, but how about a debrief with our two tables of solicitors? You know, I don't know, maybe email, maybe by telephone, maybe we actually get together for coffee and tea and juice and thank them for doing this, and then have a debrief. What could we have done more to help you? Yes? And share the experience. So think about what our colleague just said. At a board meeting, while personal face-to-face solicitation is going on, how's about acknowledging and recognizing the people at the board meeting who have been doing the solicitations, the invitations? Ask Sarah to share her experience of the conversation with the donor. Because we want other board members to hear, because remember how panicked Sarah was to doing this, but she agreed to do it. And then she says, well, it wasn't quite as bad as I thought. And it was a nice conversation, and I learned things. So imagine sharing some of these kinds of experiences at board meetings, because it's the only way we're going to get other board members to agree to play. Now, something to be very cautious about. Are the only stories we're sharing at the board meeting, you know, the special people amongst you as board members who raised the most money? No. We never, ever recognize solely big money donors and solicitors who get big money. We have a field that focuses on major gifts. We have a field that focuses on gift size. We have donor recognition programs that focus on gift size. And we salute our wonderful solicitors and donors who give the most money. Bad. Why is it bad? Pardon? It doesn't value the donor. Why else is it strategically bad? Okay, so sometimes smaller donations are more sustainable. Why else is it bad? Yes, in the back. It deflates the board member who can get the smaller gifts by saying to them, you're okay, but you're just not that special. And one more reason, a new person. Yes, Julie. It's the opposite of everything we talk about. You know, we have all this philanthropy so important, and everybody's important, and all these donors are important, but we run our institutions too often about the size of a gift. Now, another very practical thing to talk about, if you want to talk about the money portion of it, who's the likeliest bequest prospect? The loyal donor who's been giving you $50 a year for 10 years or whatever. And the largest gift anybody will ever give is frequently their bequest gift. So, when we're complimenting, when we're recognizing, let us recognize all and everything. Yes? Notice the distinction our colleague made between research and not research. Thank heavens, there's tons of no research on tons of stuff. So what we have is anecdotal best practice, which actually came from, we all tried it. You know, so I was always taught, you know, so I like personal face-to-face solicitation that is happening at a sort of a set time within the organization, because it was the only way I could manage it. I did it over a 3-month period because there was bunches of other stuff happening. You don't have to do it that way, but that's the way I chose to. And I was sort of, I figured, I'd always heard the rule of thumb was that solicitors couldn't handle more than 5 or 6 prospects. Partly that's you ask the solicitor, but anybody who's saying, oh, sure, I'll take 10 or 15, I'm already anxious about. So, you know, think in terms of those sorts of things. There's just tons of stuff we don't have research on. Okay, I want to add one, may I say, two last thoughts, actually. So I want you to think about the concept of supporting people, all right? I once, as a board member, had a development officer say to me, you're just so wonderful to work with, Simon, because you hold yourself accountable and you always do what you said you'll do, and I just never have to touch base with you. Not so good. For two reasons. Wow, only the problem children are worth being touched base with? I'm a star? But you only touch base with the problem people? That doesn't make me feel very good. But furthermore, if you never touch base with me, you know, I got a lot of stuff to do too. And so while I'll get it done, you may not be top on the list if you don't touch base with me. So think about the support we have to give. Think about the joking touching base, the funny touching base. Think about the thank yous, the candy bars, the whatever. Think about the moment when your 3 of your solicitors, you had 50, Three of your solicitors didn't do it. At what point are you going to take those prospects away? I mean, they were qualified prospects, and a bunch of them were donors, and we're just not going to solicit them because Bob, Sam, and Terry didn't do it. So you have to have a process in place to take them away when you've got volunteers doing this. Okay? Now, I want to, yes. Right. So, yes. You have rolling deadlines. You have follow-up to say, have you set up the appointments? Have you had the appointments? You've got to make sure, just as, remember we had the list of things we had to tell the solicitors to do? One that's really important that I forgot, which is they must tell you immediately when they get a pledge and not finish all their solicitations and then send them in to you, because what happens? The donor never got the thank you letter for a month. So you don't want that to happen. All right, so in the handout, there's lots of a lot of the things you've said and perhaps some more. Now, I want to give you one last thought. We talked about the vision of all of these solicitations that can be happening. I want to tell you a final story, and some of you may have heard parts of it before, but I had this epiphany very late. I had this epiphany in the fall of this year that the actual solicitation could be an extraordinary experience. I realize I was slow on this. But I do a lot of relationship building training and work and writing, and I talk a lot about extraordinary experiences, which are not related to solicitation. But as I say, it wasn't until the fall that it occurred to me that the actual solicitation could be an extraordinary experience for the donor and for the solicitor. So, in my life, I've had one such extraordinary experience as a donor being solicited. This is one of the most meaningful experiences actually of my life. And they were asking me for money. Okay? But of course, they weren't asking me for money. They were asking me to join a fight that I'd already joined. So as the founder of the Women's Fund in Rhode Island, I founded it within my community foundation, and then it became an independent corporation. I founded it and worked with a staff person at the foundation, a woman named Chris. And at the same time as this, so the Women's Fund is a social justice organization about leveling the playing field for women and girls, because it's a disadvantage everywhere in the world to be a woman. And so I did work, got very close to Chris, and she actually joined my life partner and I in a trip to our home in France, and we did some volunteer work because Chris was at that time within the Community Foundation founding an LGBTQ fund, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, gay fund. And we, both my life partner and I, were volunteering with the fund and helping to write things and talking about philanthropy. And we said, we will give a gift to the fund. You will have to ask us. So one day I get a telephone call saying, we're ready to ask you, can we bring someone who's inexperienced? And I said, yes, but also if you bring the right person, you'll probably get more money. My life partner and I talked and decided what we were going to give. So I went. The meeting was supposed to be with my life partner and myself and the representatives of the fund. And my life partner said, nah, I got to stay home and write direct mail or something today. I can't do this. So I went to the meeting. I walked into the room and there was somebody I didn't know. But it was the chair, if you will, of the advisory council. And then the right person. And the right person, of course, was Chris. So here we are. Remember, we start out with conversation. So the three of us got into this rip-roaring, angry, passionate conversation about social justice and about equity, okay? I mean, you know, we were cursing the then president. We were angry about this. We were angry about that. They knew me very well. They'd heard me say any number of times, and for any of you who've heard me before, you've probably heard this, I'm a white, heterosexual, well-educated, affluent woman. I win, except for gender, because it's a disadvantage to be a woman. But it's an advantage in the United States of America to be a white one, and it's a definite advantage to be a heterosexual. And I think that's terrible. I find it appalling that those are my unearned advantages. And my life is about fighting that. So, you know, they know that, and we're having this huge conversation, and we're just so angry. And then at a certain point, they say, well, that was just so energizing, but, you know, we do know we have to ask you for money. So this is the first phrase out of their mouth in the solicitation, and they repeated it every few sentences. You and Tom are the first straight people we're asking for a gift from. Thumbs up or thumbs down? Thumbs up. First, way thumbs up. First of all, Tom and I know we're straight. So they weren't telling us anything surprising, although surprising would have been good because new and surprising is very good. But we knew we were straight. So you and Tom are the first straight people we're asking for a gift from because you understand that justice is not just related to the marginalized people. The marginalized people can't be the only ones fighting for their own justice. You know, and they didn't say this, but I think this. Martin Luther King Jr. did not march with blacks only. He marched with whites because blacks can't be the only people fighting for their own rights. And gays and lesbians can't be the only people fighting for their own rights, so that's why you and Tom are the first straight people we're asking for a gift from, because people who know you're straight. You're not in the closet. And your gift will show everyone that straight people care about this issue too. So you and Tom are the first. So this keeps going on. Now, if you think about the motivations, the emotional triggers in life, some of the dominant ones are anger, fear, greed, guilt, flattery, exclusivity, and salvation. So they have managed, we did all the anger and fear part in our first moments of arguing and being so upset. We moved into the flattery and exclusivity really well. Okay. They already knew about the guilt, heterosexual woman. Right? So they're going on, then they say, and so we were wondering if you would consider being a founder, and founders will be recognized in perpetuity. Now, you got to say to yourself, how motivated do you think I am to be recognized in perpetuity as a social justice advocate for LGBTQ? I'd just as soon be recognized in perpetuity with a parenthetical note that said you're the first straight people we asked for a gift from. Okay, because that would be really good. So they asked. It was twice as much as I had planned to give. I said, this is going to be a conversation between Tom and I. Frequently I make decisions and just tell him. This time I'm going to talk to him. So I will get back to you. I walked out of the solicitation. I called Tom on my cell. I recited everything to him. His first comment was, well, thank heavens I wasn't there for the 20 minutes of ranting or 30 minutes of ranting and raving conversation. I had other work to do. And then his comment was, and since you've already done it today, don't come home and do it again. So now that you've done that. So then I told him all about the solicitation. And he said, oh, my God, they hit every single emotional trigger. How much did they ask for? I said, twice as much as we planned to give. And without missing a beat, he said, we're going to do it, aren't we? And I said, of course. It is one of the most meaningful experiences of my life. I was validated as a human being. That's what being asked to participate in a fight for your charity can do. I was validated as who I am. It was a transformational conversation. And it was a fight I could join that maybe could be won. Imagine if you can give that to your board members because they have that transformational experience with a donor. And in subsequent conversations with Chris, I would ask her, was it as meaningful for you, even though you knew we were going to give, was it as meaningful? And she said, yes. So when we talk about involving board members and other volunteers in soliciting, we can give them that ultimate, extraordinary experience if we help put in place all of these other things. So go do it and just do it better.